I got a dream of winning a Super Bowl. I got a dream of being in a Pro Bowl. I'm really not into dreams anymore, okay? I'm into nightmares.
The Raiders!
Caught! Touchdown! Raiders!
You're listening to the Autumn Windbags, an audio attack from the Silver and Black. Here are your windbags, RJ Clifford and Juan Soto.
Yeah, it is another episode of the Autumn Windbags. RJ Clifford, Juan Soto. Let's have some fun today. A special Sunday recorded edition of the Autumn Windbags, the 2024 NFL Draft Raiders edition. We normally do the Sunday shows, like the actual full shows for like post games, but it's the draft. So we're going big. We're burning the midnight oil recording here Sunday night. Soto was at Knott's Berry Farm all day. I was long night last night. Very quick story. You guys know, like I work UFC production. Charlie Arnold, UFC reporter. She made history. She became the first female UFC announcer. She had to step in because Joe Martinez, the original announcer, got sick. I was her mix zone producer Saturday night. And so it was a very long night, which is why I wasn't able to do this recap show with Soto Saturday night, because a lot of moving parts. We're doing it Sunday night, which is better. We have a chance to kind of digest and evaluate, take a step back. Everyone likes to jump in right away. You know, we have a chance to kind of step back, reassess the situation, all that kind of jazz. And it's a draft. I haven't seen one person say like, oh, man, we really shit the bed. A lot of divergent opinions, but I haven't seen one person be like, oh, we super reached. Like, oh man, Telesco really fucked us here. It's just like, all right, no Mayaki-y, no Gruden-y, just very, okay. You can love it or hate it. Like, there's things to, like, pull coals in. There's things to applaud, but it was nice not to just be like, all right, if we really, really, really squint our eyes, maybe this guy's a first rounder. There was none of that.
Yeah, it's... People are going to try to, like you said, poke holes at things, but you can't, especially in the top 3-4 picks, you can't be like, oh, well, this guy should never have been picked here. Mm-hmm. I think we're so used to that. It's kind of weird. Like Raider fans a lot of times will be like, oh, man, well, why are we picking so many? Like, why can't we just go chalk? Why do we got to go all these? And then we pick like the best player available. And like, what? What are we doing? Oh my gosh. Oh, it's just like a lot of these, it's just the nature of people, I guess, when they're so invested in something, if it's not exactly what they would do or they want to have done, it's, you know, the sky is falling. But I think Telesco and crew had a really good draft. I think that despite what people might think, we not only filled a lot of holes, but I think we transformed our offense with just a couple of picks.
So, we'll obviously, like, the majority of this show is going to be Raiders draft, but just real quick, like, just general draft as a whole, 6 quarterbacks in the first 12, never been done before. The big one was Michael Penix going to Atlanta when you already have $100 million quarterback there in Kirk Cousins. I've scoured everything looking for someone to give me like a rational explanation. You're just like, okay, like this is why this makes sense. And I don't think anybody outside of the Atlanta draft room can like knows why or can like they can't give a rational explanation. They can give a reason, but it makes no fucking sense. Like, you've got a quarterback on a 4-year deal, $100 million guaranteed, like what, 180, you know, total
180 something million. Yeah.
It's like a 24 year old rookie. It's like the reason why you reach so hard for a rookie quarterback is because if you hit, you have that rookie pay scale of a rookie quarterback, which is gold. Like, you know, you're rolling the dice pretty hard reaching at it's a giant reach. Michael Penix like 7 by itself. Like, that's an enormous reach. But if you hit,
I wouldn't say like, enormous,
it's an enormous reach. But if you hit, and he's, you know, a quality starter, you've got 5 years of paying pennies at the position and you're set. But that's rendered completely mute when you're already paying Kirk Cousins $180 million for 4 years. Like, did you find any reasonable explanation anywhere, Soto? where you're like, okay, that makes some logical sense.
Arthur Blank wanted him.
That's it.
That's really the only thing I can think of.
A billionaire's whim.
Yeah, Arthur Blank says, this is the guy. I see his left-handed throw, and it reminds me of Michael Vick, and I want him. That's really the only thing I can think of, honestly, because, like you said, one of the drawbacks of in this draft of a lot of the quarterbacks is they're a lot older than normal that you would normally see because of, you know, COVID and the extra years and stuff like that. So you got a 24, almost 25 year old quarterback as a rookie. Let's say he sits for 2 years. He's 27 as a first year starter. That's not optimal in NFL terms. You know, you're not getting a guy who's 20, just turned 21, like a Drake May, who may need a little bit of seasoning before he steps on the field. You're getting a guy who's played a lot of football, played a lot of high level college football. It's not optimal to just have him sit there and behind a guy who is the presumptive and you know, flat out number one starter, because you're not going to start Michael Penix with a healthy Kirk Cousins, because you're paying all that money to Kirk Cousins. He's going to start. So if you can't think of anything else, any other breadcrumbs to follow, follow the money. So Kirk Cousins is the starter there. And the fact that he was only given a courtesy call as they were turning in the pick, like in the background, you hear, yeah, we want to pick, you know, Michael Penix Jr. Oh yeah, don't worry about that. Yeah, we're thinking about taking a quarterback here. Mm. You know, so it was really weird. They were in a good position to take a quarterback anyway. I don't know that anyone was going to jump up in front and take Michael Penix Jr. From what I understand, it wasn't an option for the Raiders to move up for him. They tried to move up to 2, and they tried to move up to 3. And I don't know if they were going to take Michael Penix with either one of those picks. It was going to be Jaden Daniel or Drake May. Like, that's who they wanted at 2. And then at 3, they tried to move up to 3, and you know, they just weren't budging. But it was a head-scratcher, man. And it really that was supposed to be the first defensive player off the board, because – Atlanta does need defense. They need pass rushers. They have like the least amount of sacks the last 3 seasons. It just, I don't know that it would have changed our pick, really. I don't know that we were really that high on the quarterback. I'm not saying he's not a good player, but it just doesn't seem like we were interested in quarterback if it wasn't the 2 guys that we, or the top 3.
Well, I think it altered the draft when Penix went that early. And I think people were like, all right, if we're going to get a quarterback, we got to go, right? So 6 quarterbacks in the first 12. I think it was more. It affected the draft in general. Because I can remember I was like, I thought, and I was clearly wrong, I thought the entire NFL was kind of wondering what the Raiders were going to do. Obviously, if we trade it up to 2 or 3, it affects everything. If we go quarterback at 13, it affects everything. We trade down, blah, blah, blah. I think the Raiders are such a wild card. And it turns out it was the Falcons. The Falcons drafted Penix. Like, yeah, maybe it didn't directly affect the Raiders, but it affected the whole draft. And so... And then on the other flip, so that turned into, I think the Raiders with the second biggest shocker of the first round was Brock Bowers. Like that, I think that I saw 1,000 mock drafts. Maybe I saw Brock Bowers picked at 13 like once, maybe. Like I think maybe one mock draft, someone thought that we're going to go tight end, you know, with this stud. Everyone was like, they're trading up, or they're getting Penix, or tackle, or corner. That was 99% of the drafts I saw.
I never mocked them for us once. Once the Jets took Fashanu, I said, oh, we're getting Brock Bowers. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, the Denver's going to take the quarterback that they want, because there's only one guy left, right? Mm-hmm. After J.J. McCarthy went I believe it was 10, after Minnesota swapped with the Jets. And that's the guy they wanted anyway. It's like it was the worst kept secret in the NFL. A bit behind Caleb Williams going 1 was that Sean Payton loves Bo Nix. It's like he's like a younger, stronger armed Drew Brees. Dink and dunk guy, doesn't throw the ball too deep, whatever, accurate. That's what he looks for. That's what he likes. So I'm like, all right, well, he's going to go to freaking Denver. Who does that leave for us? And the third, what was it, or the fourth no, yeah, the fourth offensive tackle, you know, mm-hmm. number four. Remember, I told you in the very beginning, get the best of something, right?
Yeah.
Try to get the best of something, the best corner, the best tackle. Like if what's available, what's the best? And instead of getting the best corner, I think we got the best matchup problem, the best matchup nightmare in the entire draft.
Well, Telesco, this is what we learned about Telesco, right? He went best player available with the first two picks for sure, right? 3-4, you know, later on he did, but like every single GM and head coach say, like, no, I'm just going to go best player available. You know, we're building for the long term. You know, it's just like we're developing a culture, building a team. Like, I want studs. But they see holes in their roster and like, I can plug that, right? Like, in reality, that's what they do. Telesco is the one motherfucker who's like, I am genuinely going best player available. Pass catching is probably the biggest strength of our team. It maybe defensive line has become it, but for a while, it was pass catchers. That was the biggest strength of our team. And so you added another pass catcher, which no one saw coming. But Telesco's like, nope, best player available. This guy's been mocked at like number 7, number 8 on a lot of boards as best player. If we get him at 13, we're doing it. We're not plugging holes. We're not playing around. We're not trading down because we're Tom Telesco. It's like we're going best player available. And that was Brock Bowers. That was genuinely Brock Bowers.
Yeah, I mean, look, I said it in the draft, and I we talked about it, that it's a sneaky need for the Raiders was, wide receiver / pass catcher. It was a sneaky need. Renfro gone. DeAndre Carter gone. I forgot what his name was. Another dude gone. Our third receiver that we had a lot of the year gone. Trey Tucker's there. He's going to get better. How much can we use him in the slot? How much can we use him outside? So it was a need. It wasn't a pressing need, but I think when you can get someone of this caliber,
it wasn't a need, Soto. That what you described is every position group of on the team, but more so.
But you have to understand something, RJ. There's the bulk of the time in the NFL, you have three wide receivers on the field, and we didn't have three proven wide receivers. We have a kind of a gadget deep guy.
We also don't have two proven corners. We don't have five proven linemen. We don't have, you know what I'm saying? Like, we have a lot of.
We did have five proven linemen.
We got a swing guy at right tackle. Like,
he played just fine when Colton Miller was out.
Our skill player set is the most proven. It's the most proven as is, right?
See, this is the issue that I have is because it's not a glaring need. It's not a need. Well, no, it's still a need.
You can improve every group. Every room can be improved, right? Like I'm not saying like it's not improving, but like
than that, Art. It goes deeper than that. Of course, you want to improve everywhere because that's like the big stroke of the paintbrush that you want to say. You can improve everywhere. Of course, we can improve everywhere. No, it was an actual need we needed to fill.
Which room? Is there a room that needed an improvement less than the pass catchers?
Special teams. Probably other defensive tackle.
We still need a second really good defensive tackle. Like we've got two really, really good wide receivers, a tight end that we like, multiple young guys coming in that play ourselves. Like, look, I'm not saying it was a bad pick because the position group was good.
It sounds like you're saying that. That's
no,
the thing.
You're saying it was a need. You were saying it's like, no, there was a need.
There was a need. You want to go into the season with Trey Tucker being your third receiver.
I would rather that. Like this is
No. You're that's what you're saying. Yes.
I'm saying impact. That's what I'm saying. Like there's a need everywhere. Like there's a need. There's a need for fucking
now
every
Brock
position.
Bowers is not going to be an impact on the team. Okay, interesting.
Who's going to be a bigger impact? That's my question. When you draft a player in the first round, you think who's going to be a long-term impact? Most importantly, who's going to be a short-term impact, right? Who's going to make the biggest impact? Now, again, you know how I am. It's such a coin flip in the draft, right? So it's like, you know, we've seen higher blue chip tight ends than Brock Bowers flame out. I don't think he's going to. I don't think he's
going to. Who's been a more decorated tight end prospect coming out of the draft recent years?
The Falcons guy.
Yeah, you don't even know his name. He's that high of a prospect. He's that good.
Yeah. You know what I'm talking about.
Kyle Pitts. Agree.
Yeah, Pitts. He was he was a bigger blue chip, I think, than Bowers, right? Or close. Pretty close.
Well, I mean, I think he was a blue chip because of his physical measurables.
I don't think Bowers is gonna flame out. My point being is to make an impact, filling up, because if it's such a coin flip to begin with, you might as well coin flip the whole, right? I understand what he was doing, but you're trying to tell me that's like, well, there was a need here at pass catcher. I'm like, that was the least need of any other position other than kicker punter, like other than special teams group. Pass catcher was the Raiders' strength. Now, it's fine if they feel that strength more. Like, that's good. Like, the team is better. Like, great. But this idea that, like, no, there was a need there. It's like, no, that's why it was a pure best player available move.
I think
you agree on that, right?
I think it could be both. I think it was the def for sure the best player available. I've seen Brock Bowers rated in like overall big boards like 5 to 7, no lower than 7, no higher than 5, in that range everywhere. So we got a top 5 guy, top 7 guy, definitely a top 10 guy in the entire draft at 13. But the issue that I'm saying is I've said it in previous drafts, in previous shows, one of the things that makes the Ravens so great is even if they have a strength, they're still going to take a guy there if he's that much better a football player than other players. They're still going to take a pass rusher if he's that much better a pass rusher at football than other players are in other positions. The issue that we're seeing is if you look at Brock Bowers as a tight end, fine. But I don't know that we're definitely looking at what Brock Bowers can do to this offense. The offense that was the Achilles heel of this team last year. This guy is a matchup nightmare, was going to make our offense better. And you take care of a big problem with one guy. Him playing to anywhere near what his potential is as far as a matchup problem is going to unlock a lot of things that we can do offensively.
Well, look. You just said 2 minutes ago that he was filling a need, and then now you're saying he's making a strength a bigger strength. Like, which one is it?
It could be both. It could be both. It could be best player available, and also we had good pass catchers, but another pass catcher with his abilities can make a strength even stronger.
Was quarterback ever an option for the Raiders at all in any scenario?
Yes. Yes, they tried to move up to 2 and they tried to move up to 3.
I don't feel like it was. I don't think, they tried, like they picked up the phone and was like, hey, Washington, what's it going to be?
It's more than that. It's more than that. They tried hard. Everything that I've heard is they tried hard.
Trying hard?
Multiple calls, multiple offers.
Did you hear of a specific offer or just?
No. Vic Tafer wouldn't give a specific offer. But they were on the phone like, constantly trying to get up to that pick.
I don't think it was realistic, and this is why. Like, they definitely had to make those calls, right? I think if you're not doing your job, if you're not making those calls.
But I think it's more than what you're trying to make it out to be, RJ. I think you said they did a cursory call just to cover my ass, and then they didn't want to do it.
Not cover your ass. You're doing your due diligence. You're putting your feelers out there.
Even more than that, I think they wanted to get up there to do it. They wanted to, but they weren't willing to pay over to what the going rate was to go there.
That's exactly my point. I think it was never an option because the going rate was higher than what would have been allowed. If they actually paid what the asking price was, I would be eviscerating them. If they paid Washington what they were, I think that what that pick was worth and what they were asking for, we'd be short 3 first rounders and Max Crosby. And we would be rioting. Pitchforks and torches in the streets. If we would have paid to Washington for 2 what they were asking for. That's why I'm saying it was never an option because the going rate was just insane. Like a lot of Raider Nation's unhappy that there wasn't a quarterback drafted, but I think Raider Nation would be even more unhappy if the price that was paid that Washington was asking for was actually paid.
I think we have to need to take a look at what going rate is because it's not the going rate because nobody paid it. So that's not the going rate. if you go back to the last time somebody moved up to that spot, that going rate, maybe a little bit of sweetener on top of that, would have been the going rate. If they're saying, well, no, I don't want that. I want even more than what would normally be the going rate for this pick.
Going rate is whatever people pay for, right? It's like,
but nobody paid it, so that's not the going rate. That's what I'm trying to say is what Washington asked for wasn't the going rate.
Yeah, going rate, what they asked for, like,
no. Don't lump it into the same thing because it's not the same thing.
I'm saying we're getting lumped up in the verbiage.
The verbiage is very important, RJ. The verbiage is very important because you're trying to say, well, they didn't want to give Washington what they wanted, so it was never really an option because they were going to pay what it was needed. No, that's not the case.
They were never going to pay what Washington wanted.
But that's not the whole case. What I'm saying is, Telesco, I believe, did offer the going rate. It's just Washington wanted more than that.
What do you think the going rate is for the number two pick?
Probably 3 1s and a 2 and a 3, yeah, maybe. Yeah. Probably that.
I think 3 1s and like a Pro Bowler. To be honest,
No.
With the quarterbacks in this draft, and we just saw how highly this draft valued those six quarterbacks. Like, as much going into this draft, we're like, wow, these guys are really rating these quarterbacks really high. Like, I think they're overrating these quarterbacks. They rated them twice as high as we thought they were going to. Six quarterbacks in the top 12. Like, as high as we thought this draft was rating quarterbacks, it was twice as high. And so that's why I'm saying, like, what they were asking for had to have been three first and like a Max Crosby level.
Something crazy. Yeah, it wasn't the going rate.
Insane.
They weren't asking the going rate. And that's what I said before.
That's why I'm saying it was never an option. It was never going to be an option.
Okay. I guess you're looking at it in a different way. But
well, when the price, we all, like, I think everyone knew the price was so high that it wasn't going to happen. Like, there's
so look.
Like,
Are you saying it was never an option, as in Telesco and crew did never really thought it was going to happen, or it was never an option, as in Washington was never going to give up the pick?
I'm saying it was never an option because the price was so astronomical that Telesco was like, fuck you. We're not paying that. Like, we're not giving you what you're asking for. That price is astronomical. We're going to call you again tomorrow. Maybe you change. We're going to keep doing our job. I believe they did their job. But I don't think there was ever a point where they're like, okay, yeah, we can realistically make this happen. I think Washington, New England was like, you can give me your kidney, your firstborn, three firsts, a burlap sack full of gold bullion.
I think I'm just caught up on what you mean by was a quarterback ever an option? Because I think to Telesco and crew, it was an option. It was an option because they offered what they felt was the going rate. And I think I've never known Telesco to be like an unfair negotiator. So he's moved up a few times in the draft already. So, I mean, was it an option for us?
I'm saying the price was always so high. It was never an option because the price was always so high. And on the flip side of that,
we should qualify that question then.
And I also think that the Vikings always had our number anyway, because they had two firsts. Like, they had ammo we didn't to begin with too, right? So like if there was like a number that seemed like the Raiders could realistically grab, I think the mm-hmm. Vikings could have swooped in on that number because they had more ammo. So it was twofold. I think all three firsts, you know, 1, 2, and 3 were like, we're drafting our quarterbacks unless you give us everything.
And so were the Vikings really an option at 2? I don't think so. Because I don't think anyone was going to take, despite what you wanted to hear, despite how hard Harbaugh pushed, Daniels and May were not going to go behind J.J. McCarthy. I think the real hurdle was the Giants. That was the real hurdle for the Vikings, and they played it straight. Maybe they did try. Maybe they did try to get up with the Cardinals. The Cardinals were like, you know what? We need our freaking franchise number one outside guy. We need him. So we're not moving. And they like had to sit there and bite on their nails and to see that what the Giants did. And when the Giants took neighbors, they're like, all right, cool. Well, we know that the Tennessee is not going to take a quarterback. We know the Falcons, oops, they're not going to take a quarterback, right? That could have been crazy if they took freaking J.J. McCarthy. But I think that was I think it was a little bit different than what you're saying. But ultimately,
I think all the moving parts were in motion by the Raiders to try to make quarterback happen. But I think it was doomed for failure to begin with, based on all those factors. How insanely overrated the league rated those six quarterbacks. The Raiders right at 13 is just such a, like, even going, like, we found out later after the draft, like 13, you know, we thought like, oh, 22, that's better because we can get Penix there at a better value because he'll fall to there, you know. That's what we were all kind of thinking and like slash hoping pre-draft, right? Because like, oh, Penix, you know, Nix is going to go late second. Maybe Penix will go like really late one. We can trade up from two and get him at 29. Like we're kind of like hoping and thinking. Little did we know that the entire NFL thought those six quarterbacks are just the cat's meow, right? So like with the benefit of hindsight and also going in, I was just like, I never thought quarterback was really, really a realistic option. And it turned out to be even like more overblown than like anyone even could have fathomed. Thanks to Penix going at 7. That just knocked everyone's socks off. What did you learn? What did we learn about Tom Telesco in his first draft as the Raiders? Like I said, we've both done our homework on him. We've seen how he's drafted and all his times. It's like, okay, he does this. He likes that. He good quarterback here, good quarterback there. Got an eye for that. Never, ever traded down. Now that we've experienced it firsthand, we've like seen, smelt, touch, taste him doing a whole draft. Is there anything about him that you didn't know about him going in that you figured out after?
He's all about both tangibles and intangibles. Mm-hmm. He's all about both. The guys he's picking are going to have through the roof measurables. They're going to be productive players in college, and they're going to be guys that are dogs that really want to play football. Mm-hmm. Like, so it's going to be both. They're on the field and they're practice in the field. They're both. So if you're not both, he's not going to take you.
I feel like AP made like the dog part of it. Like the Telesco pass drafts, I don't know if dog was as big of an issue, but I think AP's like, you do you, Telesco, but this is what I'm looking for.
Big I think he did a good job. I think Telesco's a pro, dude. He's a pro because honestly,
he's a cyborg in all the right ways.
Yeah. No, like, nobody in this entire planet thought that Penix was going at eight to Atlanta. But when it happened, he still ended up getting the best player available and probably the best player available for quite a few picks.
He is truly a BPA. He's truly a best player available guy. Like in the middle, he kind of went position. Like, I don't know if reach is the right word, but like, oh, this guy's projected a little later, but we got him. I think he kind of went positionally in the middle, but definitely early and definitely late. Best player available. No reaching. No go get your guy, fuck your needs. We're building for the long term. We're going best. He understands that the drafts are commodities, not like, oh man, we got a need and I know I can make this guy my guy. He's like, no, these are commodities. It's a big crapshoot. We're going to do our research. We're going to do our work. Our scouts are going to do their job and we're going to try to close that gap as best as possible. But these are stocks. These are mutual funds. These are commodities. And that's what you're going after. Brock Bowers fell to us at 13. Everyone thought he was a top 10 guy. You got to go, right? It's just cyborg, which is honestly what I like anyway. And I love it opposite AP, who's the rah-rah go emotion, get the best out of the guys. And so you need Tom Telesco is the opposite of that, right? It's the left brain and the right brain working together. So like we always kind of thought that. Right, Soto. We always kind of thought Telesco was like, yeah, he's pretty sober minded. He's one of those guys. Like, he's the nerd in the nerdery with his calculator. He's even more so than that. Like, we thought he was that. He is much more that, and I fucking love it.
Yeah, he's not gonna get caught with his pants down for sure. He's gonna have a lot of options available, and they're good options.
All right, let's look at enough to do. Let's look at our draft. We had a pick in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6, 2 and 7. Obviously, we talked about Brock Bowers, tight end from Georgia, Jackson Powers Johnson, guard from Oregon. I think it's pretty unanimous that that's Raider Nation's favorite pick. I haven't seen anybody really pissed off about that one. DJ Glaze, tackle from Maryland. That one felt reachy, needy-ish, if there ever was one. Cameron Richardson, corner from Mississippi, a little needy-ish, not reach, but it felt needy-ish. And then it was straight best player on the board after that. Tommy Eichenberg, linebacker, Ohio State. Dylan
Eichenberg.
Laube. White running back, New Hampshire. Trey Taylor, safety, Air Force. Best safety in football. Best safety in college football. Fell to number 7. And then MJ Devonshire, corner from Pittsburgh. Like I said, it was best player available at least six of these 8 picks.
Yeah. So like going into the first pick, right? Everyone was still stunned. Everyone was still stunned. And all they were stunned that Atlanta took Penix at 8. And they were stunned that 6 quarterbacks were gone in the first 12 picks. You had 6 quarterbacks, 3 tackles, and 3 wide receivers gone before we went up to pick. Yep. And a lot of people were thinking, okay, this is going to be the first defensive player off the board.
Yep.
And it didn't end up being that way. It was Brock Bowers. Brock Bowers was by far the best player on the board by a lot. And like I said earlier, biggest matchup nightmare in the entire draft. I'm not saying he's the best receiver or this and that. He's the biggest matchup nightmare. So you can, when people say 12 personnel, what you're doing is the first two numbers, you count the running number of running backs and then the number of tight ends. So if it's 1 back, 2 tight ends, it's 12. So you can go from 12 to 11 to 21, the same personnel offensively, and the defense doesn't get to change their personnel. So how are they going to, you know, it all depends. Okay, well, if the defense has this personnel on the field, we can run this in this set of plays because he's also a good blocker. We can have him as an H-back. We could line him up in the backfield at the fullback. We can have him as a slot receiver. We can split him out wide. So this is this type of versatility and his production at all those different areas is going to be a real headache for opposing defenses. That's
we should line him up at fullback 51% of the time, just so he's delineated as a fullback. So when we franchise tag him, it's like $7 to keep him.
Yeah, it's so sweet.
Well, that's the best part. Like, I'm going to keep, like, because you're correct in saying, like, oh, if you're looking at just a tight end, like, you're looking at it too narrowly. I'm like, no, let's keep calling him a tight end so he stays cheap. Like, this is like, no, he's a tight end.
He's going to line up at tight end so much. And he's going to be, like, the most motion player, like Kyle Pitts is now. Yeah. He, like, rarely lines up at inline tight end. He'll be like, he'll line up there initially, but then he'll motion out into something else.
We should line him up at fullback every play and then just motion him where we want him to go. Just so we make him a fullback, just so we make him cheap.
The thing that people are going to love, that Raider Nation's going to love about this guy is his run after catch. This dude takes swing passes, little comebacks, check downs, and he makes defenses pay because he's just faster and quicker, and he's also big and strong than all these defenders. So it's not
he's so much faster than every linebacker that's going to cover him.
Yeah.
He's so much bigger than every corner that's going to cover him. And he catches shit in stride. And this is the other part too, that like no one's really talking about, like our quarterback, whoever, you know, Favre or Minshew, they're not rocket arms. Like you're not going to like rifle it 15 yards in the exact spot. Like it's going to have to be in stride yards after catch between the hashes. Oh, I wonder who could do something like that. A tight end / fullback / slot receiver / nightmare matchup that catches passes in stride and is a freak athlete. Like that's exactly what you need with quarterbacks that don't have rocket arms.
Yeah. I mean, there's some things he still needs to work on. He's a little stiff going on in and out of his routes. So he doesn't get a lot of separation because of his routes. Mm-hmm. It's mostly like scheme that gets him wide open, but he doesn't need to be wide open because he's super freaking awesome. Uncontested catches anyway. Right. You know, he's run. If you want to be picky, he's run a pretty limited route tree with Georgia. Again, comebacks, curls, you know, check down, stuff like that. Some fades here and there, but he hasn't run a lot of things. But I mean, I have no problem. I have no qualm that he's going to, you know, really improve in that area.
Yeah. California boy, West Coast guy. He'll do great. Napa out here. Dude,
yeah.
Another white guy. Telesco loved his white guys this year. Jackson Powers Johnson. Again, it was pretty unanimous around Raider Nation. Like, even though it wasn't like, we all thought like, okay, quarterback, tackle, corner. We didn't address either one of those in the first two, but even though he's a center slash guard, everyone's just like, dude, what a grab. Again, best player available. It's always good to have one of those like Mormon wrestlers on your squad. You know what I mean? Just a freaking, the only downside of him is like a little short arms and some concussion issues. Like those always scare me. But other than that, he's everything you want. He's only 20. Again, Brock Bowers, 21. Jackson Powers Johnson, 21. Telesco likes him young. I know that came off very weird. Excuse me. In the best way.
Come on, man.
He likes his draft picks. Get your minds out of
that. No, no. You don't blame everybody else. That's on you. That's terrible word
choice. Get out of here.
That's incredibly terrible word choice. Jackson Powers Johnson, again, I think by far was the best player available at 44. I think he was ranked like in the early 20s, in the low 20s. A lot of people had him as that best player available in that range. You talk about this a fire hydrant strong, and he's not a fire hydrant because he's short and squat. He's 6'3 and change, 325 pounds. So he's not like your typical maybe 290, 300 pound center. He was a huge center, which is going to make him no problem switching over to guard. He does have shorter arms. Even for an interior offensive lineman, he has short arms. But with those short arms, he's got like this like destroy the world mentality when he blocks, and his arms, like hand and grip strength, is just incredible. RJ and I know from like training jiu-jitsu, when a guy has super strong, crazy grip strength and he grabs onto your gi, you're like, shit, it's really hard for me to do stuff because he's just like controlling my shoulders with like grabbing my lapel. I really can't do much. That's when he locks onto a guy, everyone's seen that video in the combine where he just like grabs and tosses the Steelers defensive line coach like down to the ground when he's doing a drill. Mm-hmm. Like nothing. He just grabbed him, like moved him to the side and just tossed him.
And that's there might not have been a more dominant player at the Senior Bowl than JPJ.
Yeah, he didn't lose any reps. And his family's Raider family.
Yeah, his like great grandparents and grandparents were from the Bay Area, moved to Utah, but stayed
Raider fans. Yeah.
Like I can't love this guy anymore. Real quick on the O-line. I feel like might have nailed our O-line at this point, more or less. Colt Miller, definitely left tackle. Andre James, definitely center. JPJ, probably for sure right guard. Parham, almost for sure left guard.
There's no reason to move Parham.
Yeah.
From left guard. So.
So you have JPJ do right guard, and then right tackle. It's Mumford's job to lose, but we'll get to this later. But we have so much cap space. We could pick up a genuine, legit starting right tackle with the amount of cap space that we have. Like we're gonna be beasts in free agency. But Mumford, it would be the weak part of the line on paper, but he could start.
Yeah, when he started, when Colton Miller was out for those 3 weeks, and Illuminor had to move over to the left tackle. Not only did Illuminor play well at left tackle, but Mumford played well at right guard or in right tackle, excuse me. So I don't see there being a huge drop off there. I don't think that the Raiders would have let Illuminor go at $4 million a year, basically guaranteed, if they weren't comfortable with Thayer Munford stepping in there and doing the job. So as far as DJ Glaze goes, he was the next pick at 77. This is like the biggest, what I would call a reach in this draft. When you take a look at his measurables and you take a look at what he does well and where he needs to improve, it's all coaching. It's all coaching. Everything he needs to improve. Super long arms. He's almost a 35-inch arms and almost a 7-foot wingspan. 7 feet is 84 inches. He has like an 82 3/4-inch wingspan.
There's two Condors on the team now.
Yeah, that's crazy. Plus, he has seriously like JPJ level like grip strength. Like he's that strong when he locks onto you. The only issue that you're gonna find with this guy is he doesn't change directions really well. He's good. He moves fine. He's a really athletic kid. But the issue is to move direction, change direction. Like let's say a guy has a double move on him, a defender like an edge rusher puts a double move on him. Like an outside rip to like a spin move on the inside, he struggles a little bit moving all that weight and mass, changing directions. But ultimately, that's kind of a technique issue that can be fixed. His core strength is he gets pushed back a little bit on bull rushes. Again, coaching, training table, get Deuce in there to freaking get that core strong. Maybe a little HGH on the side. Who knows?
Main course, put it around there. Just
and if you need to develop a mean streak, which is what people think that he needs to develop in the run game, I mean, JPJ is right there, right next to him. Andre James has been
known to get pissed off by proxy.
Yeah, right. So these guys can definitely get in there and pump them up and let them know that, yeah, you can do this if you put your mind to it and have the right attitude.
So if we're in 12 personnel, two tight ends, most likely the lineup, a very good chance the lineup is Brock Bowers, Michael Mayer, Colt Miller, Parham, James, JPJ, Mumford. That's five white dudes out of seven with their hands in the dirt. I don't know if I like that. I don't like that many white dudes on my offense.
If they're going to be on the offense, they're on the right spots.
At least they're, yeah, exactly. Like,
hey, what if Dylan Lauby's the running back?
And then white quarterback, so that's six.
And Lauby at running back.
Yep, Lauby, so that's seven. We could have seven white guys on our offense. That's, hey, if it was a contest of credit checks.
Easy.
If it's about athleticism, easy, being good at football. Yeah. I don't know. We'll see.
Jesus. Let's move on to the fourth round pick, if you don't mind, before you get us canceled.
Am I making you nervous?
I don't want to touch that.
How about
Mary Richardson?
Country Club memberships. Is that what it was about?
That'll work.
Is that better for you?
Yeah.
Does that make you less worried? Does that make your butthole pucker less?
No, my butthole is not puckered. I'm just kind of shaking my head on what's going to happen if that goes to the wrong outlet.
That credit checks is the hot topic these days.
It's the implication of what that, you know.
I'm telling you, I don't like that many white guys on my offense. It bothers me. Rounding it out, like you mentioned, corner, linebacker, running back, safety, cornerback. It started getting like it was best player available. Definitely towards the end. Glaze and Richardson felt a little position-y. Not they're bad picks by any means. But again, it was all BPA for six of the eight.
So Richardson was straight up measurables. But he wasn't a bad player either. It wasn't like he was a bad player. He just has amazing measurables. I think the reason why they picked him was because there was a couple guys that I liked that was like TJ Tampa was still available. Cam Hart was still available, but they went with Richardson. And I looked at some tape, like a highlight reel of him. I'm like, all right, I see why they did it. And I look at his measurables and I'm like, okay, Patrick Graham gets his hands because Patrick Graham's a freaking secondary guy. Patrick Graham gets his hands on this guy, coaches him up a little bit. Dude's 6'2", 190, right? He runs a 4.3 40. He was rated the best athlete athletic score. He was rated the best athlete in the draft over the receivers, over like Quinyon Mitchell and all that. He was rated the best athlete in this draft. We got him in the fourth round at a position of need with a great coach that really focuses on secondary. So I think that's going to be a great pick for us moving forward. Maybe not this year coming up. Maybe it's going to be a special teams guy. Maybe get into some dime packages. Probably won't start. But there's definitely a guy that we can build up for the future.
Did you see the Raiders' Twitter posted his 40 time of the combine and put speed kills as the title?
Saw that.
Like, yeah. You're worried about me getting canceled. Like, you're making that awkward. Here comes Raiders Twitter making it really, really awkward.
I think that's a little bit more excusable than what you were insinuating.
White guys have great credit?
Well, you're insinuating the opposite, too. The opposite end of that. Tommy,
don't make it awkward, Soto. We can have this conversation. We're adults.
Yeah, we can, but I just, I don't think it's a conversation we can get into. Okay. Speaking of white guys, Tommy Eichenberg out of Ohio State is less measurables and all production. Mm-hmm. A little slower, but he's okay man to man. If he's on man to man coverage, he's going to be okay. When he's out in space, it's a little bit of an issue. He's great going downhill. like taking on fullbacks, taking on linemen, stuff like that, breaking through and tacklers behind the line of scrimmage. He's great doing that. When he has to go laterally, sideline to sideline, there's the issue. So we're talking about like pretty much Robert Spillane. He's a younger Robert Spillane who's going to learn under Robert Spillane and eventually take over for Robert Spillane.
I think that's like, I don't mind the pick by any means, but like Robert Spillane all of a sudden becoming amazing in coverage and getting all these picks, like that's hard to replicate. You know what I'm saying? Like I can say like, look what we did with Spillane. We can do that again. I understand the coach thinking that, but that's, it doesn't happen often. Like if they can do it with back-to-back linebackers, back-to-back thumper linebackers, and then like, oh yeah, you're like, not only are you not a liability in coverage, but you're pretty good. Like you're a weapon in coverage now. That would be a hell of a feather in the cap. Again, Antonio Pierce, he's a linebacker.
Yeah, I mean, if only had a coach who was a little bit smaller and a little bit slower, who was also really good in coverage. If only had a coach that knew how to get that out of a guy.
There is just a person of authority with an experience in that position. That would, I think, be one of the biggest feather in the caps of Antonio Pierce. Is if he can turn like back-to-back thumpers into also coverage backers, you're like, I can turn any dude with the right mentality into a 360 linebacker. Like
anybody who wants to work, yeah. I think he can do it, man. Amazing. I definitely think he can do it. Dude, Eichenberg's a tackling machine, dude. He's accurate and reliable. He's going to not take bad angles. He may get run around, you know, with the speedier running backs, but it's not going to be for lack of effort. It's not going to be for lack of preparation. He's a great pick there. I mean, like you said earlier, you know, before the show started, anytime you get a linebacker from Ohio State who's like a tackling machine, yeah, you probably want him on your team.
Yeah, you're not going to like, that's not a pick you've screwed up, you know? Like
it's, get AJ Hawk on here.
Right.
See what he thinks.
I still say, I tell this to AJ all the time, like, if his name wasn't AJ Hawk, I think he'd be like a late first rounder. But he has like the sweetest football name ever. AJ Hawk. Ka-ka!
How do you Hawks not pick don't that? Do that. That's a
how do you
seagull.
Not pick up? How do you not pick up? Oh, well, they do it better than I do. But it sounds the same pitch. Week one starters, I think Bowers, JPJ. Do you see any other? Well, first off, do you think we'll have, are you predicting another week one starter? And if not, who do you think has the best chance to be a week one starter out of the other six?
I think Dylan Lobby's got a shot at being a returner, our starting returner.
That's kind of cheating, but that's fair. You answered the question.
How was it cheating? That's fair. Like a starting position. What do you want me to tell you?
That's fair. No. I, like I said, it's,
he said it's kind of cheating.
You're it's definitely cheating, but within the rules.
That's correct. That's like, verbally, it's impossible to be cheating within the rules.
It's like in Muay Thai, I step on your lead foot when I throw a punch. It's like it's within the rules. Like you're cheating, but it's not cheating.
That's not cheating. Move your foot.
It's cheating, but it's not against the rules. That's like saying, yeah. You're a returner.
Okay, so other than those three, because I don't see Dylan Lobby as an a starting player ever on offense. Really, I see him being a complimentary player who is also, I mean, hello. Newsflash, who is also a matchup nightmare. There's a video going around right now at the Senior Bowl practice of Dylan Lobby absolutely cooking Cam Hart on an out route, like leaving him in the dust, like 3 yards of separation. Mm-hmm. This dude is like in a different level, but just as big as a matchup nightmare against the linebackers for different reasons. He can run routes. We talk about Brock Bowers not having a super big route tree. That's not the case with Dylan Lobby. Dylan Lobby is not a great runner over the football. He is a superb. He's probably the best pass catching running back in this entire draft. The issue is he's not a great runner. He's not a great inside runner. He likes to bounce stuff off outside a lot, which gets him, you know, run down. He's not super fast, but he's got wiggle and he's fast enough to get away from you. So the fact that he can run routes, he's like almost like a Hunter Renfro-ish type of guy about getting open in short spaces, but bigger and thicker.
I'm telling you, if he can get his pass blocking up.
That's a big issue. You're right.
If he can get that up there, then Amir Abdullah is out of a job. Like, yes, that's what he's, if he can do that, that's I think is that that's his key, right? You were drafted to be a third down back. If you can pass block, it's your job. Like, you will have a job on this team for a long time if he can start to pass block. So I got sixth rounder with just like that thing to like get better at. Love it.
Yeah, just think about him as like a slot receiver, but that lines up in the backfield. That's what he is. He is a slot receiver that lines up in the backfield. And if things progress and he's able to be, because look, I'm not saying they're the same player at all, but Christian McCaffrey doesn't sit there and he doesn't pass protect either. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's probably going to be Michael Mayer. If you're on third down and let's say you're running, you're in 12 and you go into 11. So let's say you have Brock Bowers like on the line of scrimmage in line as a tight end, and he goes out to the slot. I think Michael Mayer is going to stay in and block, and Laube and Brock Bowers are going to go out and cover in the routes. So if he can get better at pass protection, for sure he's going to get a lot more looks on first and second down, not just third down.
Real quick, undrafted free agents picked up. This is where Telesco's had a pretty good run. He's been pretty good at undrafted free agents. These are all coming in real time. We're recording this Sunday night. These names and numbers, there's going to be more by tomorrow. But here's like just the snapshot. Like, the one name on there is obviously Gus Bradley's son, Carter Bradley, out of South Alabama. Outside chance he's the number three quarterback that makes the squad, practice squad guy. Certainly a possibility. Anyone else catch your eye?
A couple of names are freaking sweet. Ledeatrick Griffin. If Ledeatrick wasn't already a sweet ass name, they don't call him Ledeatrick. They call him Tulu. Tulu Griffin out of Mississippi State.
Jaquan Shepherd.
Jaquan Shepherd's a great name.
Sweet name.
Look,
DeMarcus Governor.
You know what they call DeMarcus? See, another great name, but they don't even call him DeMarcus Governor. They call him Woo. W-O-O. Woo.
How do you not call him Gov?
No, you gotta call him Woo.
Too perfect. It's just too. It's like a waste of having an easy nickname that you're already born with. So now you're stealing Woo from like Will Putnam. Like, Will Putnam can be Woo, but they're giving it to someone who already has a good name. Like, that's cheating. That's unfair.
A good name, even better. Woo,
woo.
I mean, look. There's also Andrew Coker stands out to me, because Andrew Coker out of TCU played right tackle pretty much his entire career there. The only issue that he has is he stops his feet and he gets penalized a lot. Like, this motherfucker is like the Brandon Parker plus Alex Leatherwood of being penalized. I'll give you a guess. It is in his last 2 years, how many, or this last season, how many penalties did he have?
Zero.
31.
31.
I'm sorry, that was in his entire career. Sorry, 3 years. So he had 31 penalties. That's a lot. It's a lot of penalties. Hmm. And it all starts with him stopping his feet. Once he engages, Alex Leatherwood did that a lot. And that was my big concern with him, is as soon as he's engaged, he just stopped his feet and wanted to wrestle. He didn't want to keep moving his feet. So if we can coach that out of him, this is a steal pick. The guy's freaking huge, and he's strong, and he's mean. So if we get that guy going, it's an excellent pick.
So that's all the undrafted free agents. That's all the draft picks. That's all what we think of Telesco. That's all the storylines. I would just wrap with, it felt like a draft that was very BPA, best player available, and long-term. And that goes against what we've been being told. Like, oh, we're all in. We paid all this money for Minshew and quarterback, and we've got some high-rated players that want to win now. Let me tell you this. If we didn't have so much cap space, I think they're kind of punting on the season. But we have so much cap space. Like, once that Jimmy G contract after June 1st is off the books, it's like $30 million in cap. Like, that's a starting corner.
No cap.
Starting right tackle. Like, this draft with that much cap space makes a lot of sense. It makes a lot of sense in that sense. And that's also why I was partly Well, I was so shocked by Brock Bowers. It's like, we could get any defensive player we want, any corner we want. We can do the tackle thing. They're like, nope, best player available. We'll fill the holes in free agency after June 1st when it's cheap. And we've got like $30 million in cap space. It's starting to make sense to me, Soto. It's starting. I'm not going to say it's guaranteed to work, but I the plan is in place. I can see it. Draft was long term. Fill the holes in free agency. We can still be in win now ish, and not the win now like the Rams or the Saints, where you trade the entire future for the now. Now it's all right. Plug holes in free agency. We have the money to do it. Best player available in the draft. And we do what I've been saying for 3 years of this podcast. Have your core. Start trading out the older guys when they start getting old. The younger guys are ready to go. And it's cyclical.
That's how like it's supposed to work. We just have never done it here. That's the issue. We've always had to like go out and pay for a bunch of freaking free.
We've never been good enough to be like, okay, it's worth it to go all in right now. Like, let's trade the future. Let's go all in right now. We've never been that good. We haven't been so bad recently where it's like, all right, complete rebuild, complete restructure, get everything off the books. Let's start over. So we're always chasing the right way because we haven't been so good and so bad to do either. So that was my biggest takeaway after all 3 days, a whole day to think about it, a couple beers in me staring at the names. It's like, okay. Like, it's like a beautiful mind. Like the numbers are moving around, right? The equation is like, okay, I'm starting to see the plan.
My biggest takeaway is we are building a team off of our strengths. We got long, aggressive, fast athletes in the secondary because these guys aren't going to have to cover for very long. Maybe they have some deficiencies covering long periods of time, but initially they can cover these guys. They're fast enough, they're long enough, and they're smart enough to be able to stay with these guys because the quarterback's not going to have a lot of time to throw the ball. That's one thing. On the offensive side of the ball, how do you make something easier for, let's say, on one case, a young quarterback who has some physical deficiency or just as young a quarterback, I was like 6 months older or something like that, just as young a quarterback with a little bit more experience, but whose ceiling is pretty limited. You make matchups and you make things easier for him just by personnel. So I think that's what we did on both sides of the ball. And it's really smart. Yeah. So RJ, are you ready to do What Up Winbags?
I have not prepared any, but I'm assuming by your excitement, based on your smirk and your grin.
Yeah, I got some for you.
Let's do it.
All right. John 844-RK7NW. That's not a auto-generated
at all
name.
Definitely not a bot.
Farva is our quarterback. He is Plunkett 3.0.
That'd be amazing.
I mean, he could be. I don't know who Plunkett 2.0 was, but if he could be Plunkett 3.0, I'm cool with that.
Raider Nation loves them some Farva. Raider Nation loves them some Aiden O'Connell.
Yeah, and I get the love. We love Farva.
I get the love. Like, he had everything going against him. And he played better than any fourth rounder can be expected to play. And he did it with and I'm just here to do my best. I'm here for my teammates. I'm going to work harder than anybody. He's got that goofy grin, the molestache. You're like, you can't help but root for him. You know what I mean? Okay. And it certainly looks like he's going to get his chance to be Jim Pluckett 3.0. If he can't beat out Gardner Minshew, can we have a ruling here, Raider Nation? Again, we love Farva. But if he can't beat out Gardner Minshew in year two, can we say that we should try to find another answer?
Breaks, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, let's keep him on the team. Again, of course. He'll be a great long-term backup for us. Plug him in as a starter when need to be. Don't get rid of him. Let's not keep developing him. Let's not even keep hoping that he can be great for us. But let's maybe still try to find another option. Is there a higher ceiling guy out there that we can keep exploring for? Can we agree on that, Raider Nation? If he can't beat out Gardner Minshew,
a journeyman backup slash sometimes starting quarterback.
Can we agree that if you can't beat out Gardner Minshew, we should keep looking for a better option? Let's just kind of all agree. Let's hold hands.
Make and a here's the thing, guys. Look, this is not an ego thing. This is not like we're right, you're wrong, or we're wrong, you're right type of thing. The people that are in the building right now, their decisions dictate whether they have a job or not. Okay? So they're not going to put somebody on the field to be right. They're going to put somebody on the field to win games. Okay? And they see these guys every single freaking day. So if Gardner Minshew ends up winning this job, it's because he is the best quarterback on our roster and he gives us the best chance to win. It's not because of anything else.
If Farva beats up Minshew and becomes a Pro Bowler, laugh at us.
No.
Moon us.
I don't care. Whoever freaking starts. I don't give a shit. What I'm saying is if Minshew ends up winning this job, it's because he's the better quarterback. If Farva wins, it's because he's the better quarterback. Next one. Rockefeller Gibson 502. I love that one. Rockefeller Gibson 502. As opposed to Rockefeller Johnson, who's actually from the 313.
He sounds like he sells canes with a ruby on top as a job.
And it doubles as a butt plug. You just pull it out, and there's the butt plug. Anybody complaining about this pick, Brock Bowers, just because we got Mayer last year, it don't matter. This is a generational talent you just don't pass up on. If he shouldn't have been there, wow. I think what he's trying to say is he shouldn't have been there. He's a real playmaker. You need those.
He types like you text.
You know what? Because I do swipe, and I have a protector on my phone, and it's cracked. So whenever I swipe over certain letters, it just skips them.
I was going to say, Soto isn't this for 10 years, Soto. I'm not having a stroke, I swear. I was like, if you had a stroke, you'd tell me, right? It was like, why do you text? Forever I've been wondering why you're texting. Like, I'm known Soto isn't stupid. Why does he text like this? Now I finally know.
No, it's because I have a crack in my freaking screen protector, and when I swipe, like it's like it fucks up.
Yeah, Brock Bowers is exactly that. He was best player available, and that was part of the initial shock, right? Like we traded up to get the best tight end last season, and now we're taking the best tight end this season. Look, every single pick comes with positives and negatives, and it is absolutely undeniably true that it diminishes, in a way, the Michael Mayer pick from last season. That's undeniable. Undeniable. Now, do the positives outweigh the negatives? I think so. They're very different, right? Mayer's blocking is getting better. He's going to be a little bit more of a blocking tight end, but still a threat in the passing game. And then, as you talked about, Brock Bowers is like, I'm saying we line him up at fullback just to make it cheaper because he can play anywhere, more or less. So it's the initial reaction, I think, is fair that why are we going back-to-back tight end this way? Because it's hurting Mayer's position. Like we put a lot of equity, like a decent amount, as much equity as you can put into a draft pick other than a first rounder, trading up in the second. That's mm-hmm. Can't really get much more draft equity into a guy other than a first rounder. And it diminishes that. Correct. Yes. Was Brock Bowers.
It's Brock Bowers.
Yeah, it's Brock Bowers.
And to take it a little step further than that, that Michael Mayer pick, although I have heard nothing but positives coming from this regime on Michael Mayer, this regime didn't pick him. So you start there, number one. Number two, with the flexibility of a Brock Bowers, it's not like you're just taking just a tight end. You're taking a receiver who can play tight end. And with that flexibility, I mean, New England took Gronk and Aaron Hernandez in the same draft, and I think they turned out okay. Well,
one
on the field,
one better than the other, yes. One a little better than the other.
All right, last one, Raider D 2588. Got to give it to you, Soto. You were the first one and the only correct one to say Bowers, 100% flex.
This is why you want to do What If We Mix so bad.
Actually, I just found that one. I'm reading them from my phone. I'm just scrolling through, and I found it. Because we didn't have any What Up Win Bags. Like, I'm going to find a couple What Up Win Bags. But, yeah, it's true. As soon as Penix was gone, I said, I said, it's our pick's going to be Bowers.
If it was like in hindsight, like only in hindsight, didn't make any sense to me. It's like, yeah, Telesco's going to go best player available. That's Brock Bowers.
And you follow the breadcrumbs, right? Nine is going to be Roma Dunze, and we all knew that was going to be his pick, right? Mm-hmm. We all knew the pick. And then 10 was the trade up from the Vikings. The Vikings only trade up so another team doesn't hop, skip them. That's why the only reason you trade up one spot in the first round, so another team doesn't skip in front of you. They do that because they want the quarterback, JJ McCarthy, who they got. And the only iffy one that I felt was the Jets. But I really did feel like the Jets were going to go for offensive line because, I mean, the cast of characters, besides Davante Adams, who did he really have out there in Green Bay? He made a lot of second, third, fourth, fifth round undrafted free agent guys look pretty good. So Aaron Rodgers just needs to get protected. He needs to stay upright. So getting Fashanu was a really good pick for them. And then we all knew, I think the whole world knew, that Sean Payton had just a raging, thick, veiny boner for freaking Bo Nix. So
that did was you hear hell. Him in his post-draft presser? He compared him to Patrick Mahomes. He's just like, what was the it was also a tweet. Oh, what was it? What was the tweet?
Yeah, my chick looks like Cindy Tran. Whatever.
Right. It was like, well, the way I felt about Patrick Mahomes is this, you know, I tried to trade it for Patrick Mahomes, but I couldn't. That's the same way I feel about Bo Nix. It's like, why are you putting that on him? Now it's like, unless you're the best football player on God's green earth, you've underachieved what Sean Payton wanted you to be.
Look, like, if Bo Nix was going to go anywhere in this draft, he went to the perfect spot for him. A place that has Stidham, Milf Hunter, and who else to have over there? Slap dicking around over there in Bronco Country, Donkey Country. They got some other, you know,
got a couple of
scallywag out there.
So just a bunch of guys that are going to go 0-2 against the Raiders again next season. That's all.
You have a need. You have an offense that's fit for your skill set. I mean, it's a perfect place for him to go.
Perfect place for him to shit the bed against the Raiders twice a season. Oh,
for sure. You can't throw on your back.
For the fifth straight season. All right. That's the end of our 2024 Raiders NFL Draft Special. We threw this in on the weekend for you guys. If you want to know the watch, like you catch the watch-alongs from all 3 days down in our YouTube page. We'll be back on Thursday like normal. I'll be in Brazil. It'll be a different one. This week, I'll leave for Brazil on Tuesday, so we'll record it Wednesday. Maybe I'll wear a big Carnival headdress. Did you change your name? Do you have a new handle? El Maloso Soto.
The Maloso is a bad guy. So when I critique NFL teams, man, I'm going to be the bad guy sooner or later to everybody. So
El Chael Sonnino, Maloso.
He's not a bad guy.
Not a bad guy. He's a good guy.
He's a good guy.
Okay.
Helps a lot of people.
Until then, knock on wood if you're with me.